City Current, produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or listen on KDAC 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to a combined edition of City Current. I'm Mary Van Sickle, and I'm here with Assistant City Administrator from Bismarck, Jason Demonic.
Good morning.
And City Administrator from Mandan, Jim Neubauer.
Good morning, Mary and Jason. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Thanks for coming in, you guys. It's an unusual situation for us to be all sitting here together.
Thanks for letting me join you. This is not our normal week, so we're...
It is not our normal
Bismarck's week. Bismarck's jumping in situation. With Mandan.
You can pay me the $5 later for allowing that privilege, so appreciate it.
It is Wednesday, December 19th, and we are in the studios at Dakota Media Access. So before we talk about some of the combined efforts between the cities of Bismarck and Mandan, I thought we'd probably start with a couple of the highlights from last night's city commission meeting. Mm-hmm. Both Bismarck and Mandan had their city commission meeting last night. Again, unusual situation. Let's start with Mandan. You had a couple of, I shouldn't call them old business. I don't think they were old business, but a couple of items come back to the agenda that were really nice, positive items, yep. And one had to do with the purchase of the old Bill's Super Value. Is that recall?
Both buildings were Bill's Super Value at one time, and then Central Market, and I can't remember all of them, but they have mm-hmm. both been grocery stores. And we put out a request for proposals this fall. Committee met. Runnings was the selected proposer, and last night we had reached an agreement with Runnings on a purchase agreement. So the commission approved the language of that purchase agreement. So we look forward to now starting the closing on the property process to get Runnings in. They will do some remodeling, and they hope to be open in the fall of 2019.
That's nice to see.
Yeah, big step for the West End of Mandan.
Yeah,
so very good.
It is. A lot of speculation over especially the last year or so, about what was going to happen with those properties. So nice to see that moving forward.
And we've talked before about, this feels a kind of an area of need when the grocery stores left, that, Runnings brings some grocery items, mm-hmm. they'll have some clothing items, and they'll have some hardware items. And all three are things that we have been asking for in downtown Mandan, and they bring it all to the table.
And so they're actually starting next month with some construction moving around over in that property. So
the plan would be as soon as we get the closing on the property, they could take control and start moving. So they want to get the ground running.
Sounds good. Another project that came back for approval was mm-hmm. the loan for Nordic Steel.
Yes, we've had you may have heard about our business pitch challenge
yes.
that we put on. We had finalists come in, or kind of like a Shark Tank kind of deal. Nordic was the winner. They had a growth fund meeting last week, and the growth fund made a recommendation to approve a $10,000 forgivable loan to these folks, and which will help them kind of get off the ground. And they're already in operation, but they just need a little more capital to keep on going. So we're pretty happy to have them.
Forward. Yeah, that was great to see. Big public input meeting at the tail end of the commission meeting last night about a project that we've talked about a number of times here on this program. And that's the Southside Improvement Street Project.
Right. No special assessment projects are easy. I think Jason will probably attest to that.
I would concur wholeheartedly.
And what we had heard is we knew we'd installed, we'd replaced some water lines over the last couple of years. Streets have been torn up. It's time to put things back together. We had a street improvement project proposed. We sent letters out to the folks in the district indicating here's what we think an estimated cost of your assessment that went out, I believe, 10, 11 days ago. We heard some feedback, and this is part of how your government works. Feedback came in from residents in the area. Hey, can we come in and talk to the commission? We'd like to be heard. And in that case, it's kind of unusual to have another public input meeting after you start a protest period, but the commission said, all right, come on in, we'll see what we can do. And so last night we went from, I think, 6:30 till 8:30, 9 o'clock, listening to the folks in that area, and we understand the demographics of this area, mm-hmm. and we understand the cost of the assessments are high. The commission kind of when we finished the regular meeting, the commission had some discussion on ways to try and buy down and help the residents in this area, mm-hmm. and they approved last night buying down the project by $1.5 million to be paid for out of our sales tax fund over the next 20 years. So We had heard, again, this is part of citizens coming up to myself over the last few weeks and saying, hey, we would like to be heard by the commission. And the commission agreed, let's hear what they have to say. They made a motion to, you know, buy down part of the project. We'll find out in January if the project gets protested out or not, and we'll move on forward from there.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's encouraging. I mean, people were very respectful. We know that, and again, demographics of the area, we look at very closely. But, you know, we still have to get those streets fixed. And
well, anytime an agenda item packs a room, we definitely are paying attention on this end as well. And looking at the screen last night, you could see people lining up outside the door to testify. So
yeah, we took a lesson a little bit from, I think, in Burley County, and Bismarck had the wind farm issue going on a little while ago.
Certainly.
And so we had another room set up in City Hall where they were watching the meeting live. So thanks to Dakota Media, we could...
We had an overflow room.
We had overflow room. Yeah. You know, there were probably 10, 12 people in that room also. So it worked out pretty well.
And as you said, nobody likes an assessment project. This is, you know, and every situation is unique.
Yep.
You know, and this one is an older neighborhood, an older established neighborhood that hasn't had a lot of improvements over the years. There's a significant portion of the property that's owned by the Park District.
Right.
Then you have another portion owned by Burlington Northern. So all of these things circling together make it a very, very tricky and very very complicated.
Right.
It's not an easy package to understand.
Mm-hmm. Older area of towns are unique. And from a standpoint of you got, you know, your typical grid system for lots and blocks and things like that. But over time, maybe there were three or four houses on a half a block. Today, maybe there's two houses. So that over time, people have wanted a larger yard, more square footage, which increases the cost and all of those things. So there's a mixture of property in this area, but it includes, you know, some mill and overlay of streets that we can do that. It's some of those streets are in a shape that you're going to have to do full-depth reconstruction.
Right. Some have alleys they want paved, some don't. There's street lighting issues. Yep. There's
stormwater we're trying to get. There's really no stormwater down there right now, so it all kind of sits and puddles. It's a very low area of town and flat, and we're trying to get that water off the streets, because the sooner you get the water off the streets, the longer your streets are going to last.
So this one's going to come back, and we will definitely be talking about this one again with you after a commission hears now after the protest period.
Right. So
which
protest,
is end of January, Jim?
Protest period is 30 days, and we started that a few weeks ago. Protest period is ending on January 7th at 4:30 p.m.
Okay.
So
we've stay tuned, right?
Yep. Stay tuned. And like I said, I think from a standpoint of public input meetings, we had done a public input meeting down in the area at Mary Scart Grade School several weeks ago, and this was like, again, we heard, I wasn't able to attend or I didn't go, and can you explain what's going on in the project? So the commission and the engineers took another opportunity to kind of run through and say, here's what the project is, and here's how we are estimating the cost to be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, we're going to hear about this one. This one will come back.
It will come back January 8th to determine the sufficiency of protest and decide or that's where it's a go or a no-go on the project.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jim. Moving over to the Bismarck agenda from last night, or Bismarck highlights from last night. A few things I should mention on the onset that Commissioner Oban, who holds our portfolio in his, or our organization in his portfolio, gave a report last night of his, all of his.
All the portfolio groups. Assignments that he has. Yep.
So he gave a nice report on us.
Gave you a little shout out.
That. Yeah, that was great to see. Couple things that came back to the commission last night that I thought were interesting, and they kind of relate. The manufactured home special assessment group kind of as that conversation continues, as well as a curb and gutter deposit conversation last night, or actually action was taken on that.
Correct.
And these things all relate back to this whole special assessments task force that you've had, this whole utility rate restructuring.
Yep.
You know, these are all kind of circling around these issues. And now we have legislative action that might affect some of this too. But the action taken last night on the curb and gutter was to eliminate this deposit that developers have had to do.
Correct. And this is a policy that's been in place for more than two decades. And really what it is, it's a deposit on an undeveloped lot that a developer is required to place for the curb and gutter. So it, what it really would do is if the lot was ever fell into bankruptcy or the ownership changed away from the developer back to the bank, the city would use that deposit to pay for those street improvements through the special assessments. What we learned through some of the conversations, it hasn't happened in many, many years.
Yeah.
And the developers, in some cases, are putting up a substantial amount of money. And it's tied up into a CD. Obviously, there's a little return on that. But they're, the value of these lots, if they were turned over to the city, would far exceed those deposits. So, you know, years ago when the interest rates were much higher, there was much more risk. As we heard from one of our local developers last night, they have much more skin in the game today than they did probably 20, 30 years ago.
Certainly, so, and this was something implemented in the late 70s or early 80s. So, and there appears to be no fiscal impact to the city. So
It actually frees up our staff from doing some of the things of managing the CDs and working with the developers for those deposits. So
that goes away. The action was taken last night.
Yep.
The manufactured home special assessment issue, though, is something that's kind of still circling
that
around
will,
out
that
there.
That conversation will continue to evolve. And really what we're looking at, state law, North Dakota Century Code, tells cities that manufactured home parks can be assessed at a rate of 2, which is a commercial factor, versus a residential factor, which is 1. So a special assessment district that impacts a manufactured home park, you will likely see those assessments being a little bit higher. The state recognizes them as a commercial venture. Some of the park operators in Bismarck have asked that they be treated more like a residential neighborhood. Oftentimes, manufactured home parks have private streets and private services inside. So,
and the city has already reduced their special assessment to 1.5
currently, and that was a move that was made about a year ago. The conversation last night really kind of shifted towards, well, the legislature's starting very soon in January. And if this is a change that the park operators throughout the state are looking to implement, then let's just kind of take a pause, see where the legislature's at. We'll report back in February just to know if any bills have come up. Crossover is mid-February, so we'll know with fair confidence at that point what we'll be dealing with. So no action taken on that one, but we will certainly continue to monitor that one and report back if there's any changes.
The State Street Safety Project was
resurrected
last night. That's something that was put on hold for a while. And as I understand, Mark Berg, your traffic engineer, was talking, specifics aren't really there. There's lots of options that can be incorporated into this safety project.
Right. And it's throughout the entire State Street corridor, there is some state funding to help with these improvements, which is obviously a big boon for the city. But really, as the name implies, it's about enhancing the safety of that corridor.
And because the funds are only going to be in place for a couple more years, it was put on hold in 2015, time to take action is now.
Right. If we're going to capitalize on that, on those grants and those dollars that are there, we need to engage.
So they're going to go back, kind of study the alternatives and come back with a recommendation. We'll hear again.
Yeah, and the recommendations that were there initially, they'll be looked at. Are these still valid? Do we need to enhance them? Do we need to make any changes? So over the next couple of years, I think we will see some minor improvements along the way.
All right. And again, the project will come back to the commission, I would assume, before it moves forward.
You bet.
And lastly, a highlight from last night was the Renaissance Zone pulled forward on the Patterson purchase. And that was approved by the commission.
By the commission, yeah. So we've got a group that is looking to purchase the Patterson. That's the building with Peacock Alley. It's probably the most recognizable
on the main level.
The upper levels are senior living and assisted living. So there are, I believe, 113 apartments in that building. This group that's buying the building will be doing a complete renovation of all the apartments, some exterior work. I understand that there's also some improvements to the ground level, more of that lobby and entrance area for the tenants. So certainly excited about that. That's a landmark building in downtown Bismarck. Everybody sees it. Everybody knows what it is. It's nice to know that we've got a group that's coming in, making some improvements to ensure that that building's here another 100 years.
Well, and it serves a large community of people.
Absolutely.
With that many apartments in the downtown area. That's a big facility.
Without a doubt, it's the largest concentration of apartment units in downtown Bismarck, all in one place.
So we covered the agenda highlights from last night. I think we hit the highlights. I mean, there's a lot of business that's conducted, but we just kind of picked and choose a few items there. But couple things we want to talk about that Bismarck and Mandant work on together. And one of them is a project that's getting some attention lately, and that's our Central Communications Center. Mm-hmm. In June, the primary election in Mandant and in Bismarck, we approved a 50 cent tax
on your communication device, I think was the actual term.
And the purpose was to find a new location for CENTCOM that would serve us in the future.
Right. And so right now, CENTCOM is looking for more space, looking for a building that is perhaps more weather resistant. You know, if there's a natural disaster or a major storm that came through and 911 communications went down, obviously that would be a catastrophe. So the building that they're looking at today is intended to be able to support all activities throughout any sort of natural disaster. They're going through some planning phases now to find out what is it exactly that footprint should look like. What are the needs in the building for all the dispatchers, the staff, the equipment? Obviously, there's a lot of technical equipment in there.
And this is a shared facility for Mandant, Bismarck, and Burleigh County.
You got it.
Yeah. Yep. And the location has already been determined. They're going to be adjacent to
Dakota Carrier Network up on 43rd Avenue and Coleman Street. Right. So, and there are other first responders that rely on CENTCOM. It's not just those three. There are some of the rural dispatchers and things like that as well. So certainly a very important need, a very important project going forward. I think we would expect to see some pretty significant steps in 2019.
Right.
And 2020.
In design phase now, right. So ground could be broken already.
Early in 2019.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think that location that they chose is important too, because I think that's the, for all of the IT infrastructure coming into that building that exists there right now.
Heavily secured building, weighed
in their factor to locate. Mm-hmm. You know, the 50 cent increase, make sure that everyone knows that went to all of Morton County and Burleigh County residents, which both Bismarck and Mandant are part of those two counties. Mm-hmm. Mandant is in the joint operation with Bismarck and Burleigh. And Morton and Mandant, a portion, that share of that 50 cent increase, Morton County keeps a little bit of it because they're still with state radio, and then the rest goes to Mandant to help support the needs here. So it's important to know that you know, those funds that were voted on in June, here's what they're being used for.
Right.
911 is one of the most important things that we have in our communities.
Yeah. Critical piece. When somebody picks up the phone to dial 911, you don't think about what if it doesn't work, because it has to work.
Well,
it has to be there.
And that is their primary function, is to take those calls and then direct them to the appropriate agency to respond. And that leads us to the next joint efforts between the two cities, and that's the police department. Yep. I mean, first and foremost, that's, you know, CENTCOM related to this. But the police departments in both Bismarck and Mandant have a history for years for working together. I mean, we're only separated by a few bridges, and that's pretty much it.
A few bridges and a river, and I know from Mandant's perspective, even when we have hired a new police chief, we've had input from Bismarck, and I think Bismarck does the same with Mandant. I know that Chief Siegler has been on several hiring boards for Bismarck, so we, like you said, we work very well together. Both Bismarck and Mandant have mutual aid agreements between each other. We know if there's an event going on in Mandant, and that's taking up our officers, Bismarck will have our back. And if there's an event going on in Bismarck that's taking up a majority of their folks, we will have their back. And we found that out, I think, during the DAPL protests, that both communities work along with, you know, agencies around the country, work very well together. But we always knew that, hey, you know, we're neighbors. We help each other out. There's no questions asked. It's at the drop of a dime. Call. We need you.
Evident also with President Trump's visit with security that had to go from point A to point B and across the river. That makes sense. And certainly, you know, we could talk about the fire departments as well and the shared resources between you. Bismarck has the fire training center out by the city landfill that is available for far and wide throughout North
Regionally,
Dakota.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And Mandant uses it. Mandant has a...
we have a facility.
And you have a shared canine, smoke-detecting canine over there as well.
We have.
Who visited us one time at City Current.
Yes, he was here, and Shane Weltekal brought the Webster, I believe. always want to call him a different name, but it is Webster, who comes over and is very good at investigations and can, I think it's 30,000 different scents a dog can pick up. So that I think it's a matter of you and I may walk into your house and maybe there's a pot of spaghetti going on. And you and I can say, hey, that's spaghetti. The dog can walk in or...
Yeah.
The dog will go inside the house and they can determine there's this much oregano, there's this much spice, there are all kinds of things that a dog's nose can pick up.
Yeah.
And they do a great job.
But it's for fire investigations.
It's for fire investigation.
That's where it's really valuable. And that again, that canine is available to all the fire departments and within the region because it is the only one, as I understand, in North Dakota.
And he will find normally the source of that fire and also can determine based on how they're trained. You know, what they think, what is the igniter?
The accelerant.
Yes, there you go, the accelerant.
Highly specialized training there.
Right.
And then leading into this, you know, all these joint public safety issues between the communities, the jail is a large jail facility that has been completed in Burleigh County. That was a long time coming, took many years of planning and negotiations between the four entities, both counties and cities, and within the region. I think that as you pointed out, the jail does serve the region.
Yeah, there are other counties that will house prisoners and inmates, and I believe the jail facility is also used by the U.S. Marshals Service to retain inmates and things like that along the way.
And I think it's important to point that out. I mean, this is a large facility. It was a major investment for citizens in the community, and if you could have imagined four of those being built of a smaller size and having staff in each one could be considerably more expensive. So
if I remember correctly, this went to a vote.
It did.
The folks in Morton County and everybody in Burleigh County, I mean, this question was put to the voters. They said, yes, a combined jail facility makes sense. Let's do that. And I think a
half cent sales tax is currently collected in Burleigh County, I believe in Morton County as well.
And it's on until the facility is paid for.
Yep, continued support.
So there was a sunset on that.
So it's up and running and has been for over a year. And it, as you mentioned earlier when we were talking about it, it has resulted in little longer transportation costs of getting the people over into the facility over here. But other than that, on the other end, it's also freed up space within the county facilities that are now being reused for other purposes.
Right. Burleigh County's current or former jail facility downtown is going through a significant renovation to make room for some of the state's attorney staff and other office workers within Burleigh County. So it repurposes an existing facility, but then it also provides a much newer and state-of-the-art facility for the law enforcement staff today.
In the Morton County, the combined law enforcement center in Morton County, they've hired an architect. They're busy going. They did a kind of a work study, workplace study to see what kind of needs there were. We know we've been outgrowing that facility since it was built in 1985, I believe. And in turn, the architect is on board now, putting the plans together to make use of that old jail space. They will continue to have a couple jail cells up there for holding.
Yeah.
I think Morton County has a transport team. We know that our police officers, it's about an hour round trip by the time it's 20 minutes over to drop off a resident to you do the paperwork and
process,
you come back.
All that. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so like I said, it's taking a little bit more time, and I think that's true for Bismarck because it is on the southeast side of Bismarck, but I think there are benefits that outweigh that time.
Sure.
And like I said, we make the best use. And if we've got, you know, two folks to transport, we'll bunch them up and bring two over rather than just one. So
makes sense. The Gold Star Community Task Force is another area. Bismarck, Mandan have representation on that task force. Yep. I believe it's the head of the task force is Renee Mock, who's Bismarck Burleigh County Public Health Director.
You got it.
So there's been a lot of activity, and we've talked about that individually at each one of the city currents for Bismarck and Mandan about that activity. And I know a few weeks ago, Renee Mock had put together a group of individuals and panelists from around the state to talk about social detox and what Grand Forks is doing, what Fargo is doing, and then to push the discussion of what we can do in this community because. Right now, there is no facility or process for that. We use the hospital emergency rooms with police department representation there to monitor that activity, which is costly.
It is.
And inefficient for them. So the cruel reality is that something has to be done.
It's a problem in both communities.
And absolutely.
Is what's the most efficient way to deal with this? And is it having doctors and police officers in an emergency room while someone detoxes, or can we do that in a better fashion that is freeing up resources for both but still accomplishing that end goal?
I think we're learning very quickly that there is a different approach that has better results when dealing with people that have substance abuse issues and things. And it's not... people don't typically go to jail to find the help that they need. So this would circumvent incarceration and put them in a place where they can get to the services to help get through the addiction or the withdrawals or whatever the case may be. So it's a completely different look at dealing with an addiction issue. But I think, you know, seeing where the governor is and where the governor's wife is on Recovery Reinvented, there is a lot of support statewide for a different approach to how we've been handling this in the past.
Yeah.
So
a lot of recognition that the problem is significant enough to,
yes,
we need to take some action. So
I think Jason and I have heard that whenever we're at a, whether it's a chamber EDC meeting, what's your number one issue from your employers? It's behavior health and addiction issues and
mental
things
health
like that. And, it's, and having a shortage of workers, but it's the mental health side that has, you know, and that's probably new within the last 5 or 10 years that people are recognizing that this is an issue that we need to try and do our best to deal with and find some solutions.
And I would like to add that the Gold Star Community Task Force and social detox, as important as that topic is, it's not just a Bismarck mandate issue, it's also a statewide issue. And we are having fruitful conversations with the staff at the Department of Human Services at the state level. They are helping guide this conversation because they have been facilitators with Fargo and Grand Forks. So it is a very collective effort. It's not just the two communities that are working on this.
So the next steps, the group is continuing to meet, and they'll be coming back with some recommendations for the community to consider and the commissions to consider.
So we're often asked, is there a building identified? Are we building new? Are we buying old? Still unanswered questions, part of the discovery. But I would look for 2019 to see some very positive strides as we move forward.
Okay. Liquor licenses, shifting a little bit here. Liquor licenses were have been on the agendas of both city commissions as of late. I know Mandan went through kind of a restructuring, if you will, not completely, but you had a request for a beer, and wine bar.
And last 5 or 6 years, we have had, you know, we used to have caps on the based on your population. You can only have so many Class A licenses and Class D licenses and things like that. We started to get more requests for those, and they were all based on your census every 10 years. And that's a long time for folks to wait, I guess, in our situation. We looked at all the other, mostly other communities in North Dakota to try and find out what's everybody else doing, because, yeah, I've got a business, I want to come in and open in your community, and we say, you can't, because we have no license available. And so we did some amendments and got some public input from our license holders and changed the way we do things. And so that's worked out well in our case. And in some cases, it's different. Every community is a little bit different, but we have been having conversations with Bismarck. We had those conversations back when we looked at adjusting hours, and Bismarck is having conversations with us, and we're talking about those things together because, you know, in a, I always like to say we are a community. Significantly different checkbooks and pocketbooks, but we face very similar issues.
Absolutely. It's a collective effort on both sides. I mean, we can't make decisions in Bismarck in a vacuum and not realize that they may not have impacts or may have impacts on other communities. So
well, and the other part of that is consistency in regulations and ordinances makes a lot of sense. Whether you're talking about building and developers or off-road highway vehicles.
That's on there too. Yeah, talked about that last time.
I mean, if these things are so widely different, it's very difficult for people to understand what is allowed and what is not allowed. You know, getting off on the liquor license thing, but this the Bismarck issue. Your new city attorney Janelle Combs brought this to the conversation and said, you know, we've got a system over here that seems pretty complex. Let's take a deeper look. So she invited all the Class D and
Class E's. So those are the
holders to come together.
Right. The Class D's and the Class E's are the only two licenses that we have that there is a cap. We're still under a cap system. We met with a good number of them last week, and we're really talking about, I think we have 24 Class D licenses and we have 16 Class E licenses. So to translate, basically those are the bars and the convenience stores with off sale, and then the liquor stores. Those are really what we're focusing on. The group that we met with, very good feedback, very engaged business owners. We recognize that those Class D and Class E licenses are an asset to those businesses because they do pay a premium when they buy those licenses initially from the city.
Considerable investment.
Very much so. Yep. And what we heard from the business owners is that they like the system we have based on the census. So they do want us to continue to wait until the 2020 census. City staff was recognizing that we are at least 10 or 12,000 people more than we were in 2010 with the last census. So the question was asked, would there be an impact on if the ordinance was changed to allow the licenses to go out sooner? Loud and clear, we heard, don't change the system. We like it the way it is. So we're going to continue to look at the other components of the alcohol licensing, and certainly we look at what Mandan's doing. We'll look at what other communities are doing. One interesting little tidbit, so we did have a request from one of the senior living centers in Bismarck. They would like the opportunity to sell cocktails and beer and wine to their guests. The bar and liquor store owner said overwhelmingly, yeah, that sounds like a good license. We all might be there one day.
Well, I thought it was interesting that it's not allowed at all. I mean,
they can provide beer at no charge, but they want to be able to actually sell and mix and distribute cocktails with dinner. Apparently these are things that work in other communities, and you know, the group that asked us here in Bismarck, they have other facilities throughout the region.
Apparently there was some fear at the beginning of this.
We learned something new every day. I would have never thought that, but that's interesting. I'm sure that now that it's come up, Mandan will get
the question. And we quickly put a list together this morning. There's probably somewhere between 10 and 12 facilities in Bismarck that could fall into this category. So that's our next conversation. We'll reach out to that group and say, hey, are you interested? So, and I'm guessing that will bleed over into the Mandan conversation as
Again,
well.
Again, consistency.
Yeah, we'll share what we learn with Mandan if they're interested.
Also last night, as a result of that conversation, I believe there was an agreement that the restaurant owners who have a different liquor license, we're also going to be coming together in a meeting to talk about what they're doing and how their system.
That was something that we talked about yesterday in our office with our city attorney, Janelle Combs, is that, we've heard from the bar and liquor store owners. We need to hear from the restaurant owners as well. If we're going to be making any changes, we don't want to make them piecemeal. We're going to take a comprehensive look at all liquor licenses. And as the mayor mentioned last night, we're up to letter S with licensing. We've got some very unique licenses in Bismarck that are kind of a one-off. Is there a way to maybe streamline those or look at them a little bit differently to maybe preserve the alphabet or make it just a little more efficient for everybody else? So,
we're in that same situation where there are a number of different licenses based on, I want to just distill spirits.
Right.
There's a separate license for that. I just want to brew beer. There's a separate license for that.
We've got one of those too. Wineries, that's another one. So,
So it common stuff that we all face every single day. And like you said, the relationship between the administrations and Bismarck and Mandan, Morton and Burley, all very good in my opinion. And I think
I would agree. I think we work really well together. I like being able to call Jim or send Jim an email and say, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? And just to be able to share that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if we've gone through something once, we'd be happy to share with Mandan. And I would suspect the same. And that
I think it saves a lot of time in the long run.
It does.
And we're running out of time. but I want to give a shout out to another group that both cities contribute to, and that's the Metropolitan Planning Organization.
Correct.
This is a very important group that has representation from both cities and both counties. I believe City of Lincoln as well.
Lincoln as well, yep.
And they meet on a monthly basis, and it's a kind of a technical group, and they really are the place where all the big transportation projects in this community funnel through. This is, to me, kind of the first step. I see that these projects are presented, identified, prioritized, and then they break it down. And it's interesting always too, because it can take years when it starts at MPO level to get down to the actual city levels where it's implementation time.
We've talked before about when there's federal aid or state aid street projects, because somebody expects, well, you should be able to do that this summer. If we're talking even today in December. And, you know, we've mentioned the Old Red Trail project many times, and we go, holy, we've been talking about that, or that's been in the works for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And in 2020, you know, ground will be broke on that project. But
long-range transportation planning, that's typically what I say. And they're looking oftentimes at a 20, 30-year horizon. I mean, some of the work that they're doing today may not be realized for another generation of projects. So, and I guess it's fair to say that we are required to have an MPO because of our population throughout the community.
Right.
So if we want to receive federal aid for some of these projects, we have to be doing this. And I think it's a great way to show that there's cooperation.
And staff from both cities are on the staff
absolutely.
Of the MPO.
Both cities and Morton County, Burley County, and Lincoln.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Morton County has a representative, Bismarck has a representative.
At the elected level.
At the elected level. Mm-hmm. There's also a TAC.
Technical Advisory Committee
meets on Monday. There we go. Before the Tuesday meetings. And another example of the cooperation between the two communities. I think Bismarck they meet in Bismarck the first 6 months of the year, and and they come over to Mandan City Commission Room and meet in Mandan's the last 6 months of the year. So again, that part of is Dakota Media Access, their ability to broadcast those live, and you can watch them. And it's something that there are times when I will be in my office and I will, you know, load it up and I'll be watching that, and I don't have to walk across the hallway and attend in person.
But you could still run over there if something came up.
Absolutely.
You bet.
Paying attention.
Yes, we have been cable casting and archiving and web streaming those meetings for probably the last couple of years, and I find them really interesting. They happen not typically in the late afternoons when most of our public meetings start. Mm-hmm. These are 1 o'clock on a Tuesday once a month, I believe. And that's primarily because, well, they're still available to the public, obviously, open meetings, and we record them and archive them, as I said. But these are primarily for staff. The MPO meetings are for other staff in the community to report to the elected officials what's happening with these transportation projects.
Vetting the projects, reviewing the studies. A lot of the MPO projects are studies looking at what the improvements would be 10, 15, 20 years out. So, it's definitely a good group. I'm glad we've got it.
Yes.
Glad they work well together.
Yeah. How these projects could move forward without that kind of structure would be extremely difficult.
Yeah, we,
and then you'd constantly be having friction between what Mandan or Morton wants and Bismarck and Burley. This way they come together at early stages to prioritize those projects as funding becomes available, whether it's state or federal money.
So. And it really boils down to the project need. I know there have been some projects in Mandan that have received federal funding, and that was due in part to not only the validity of the project, but also the support of Bismarck and the support of Lincoln and Morton and Burley. So it's a very collective effort to recognize the significance of the projects, and they're intended to be primarily safety and transportation related.
Absolutely. So
I think having the elected officials at that table is a great asset, because and they are informed and they can see how there has to be some cooperation, some horse trading that goes on. All right, your project will get priority this year.
Absolutely.
Our project will get priority the next year. And those kind of discussions absolutely need to occur.
Absolutely. Okay, we got a signal. We're going to wrap it up, but a couple things. Our January meetings are also going to double up for Bismarck and Mandan City Commission. We'll all be on the same night for the January dates. So what we're going to do, rather than have a combined event, although this is very, very nice to do, we're going to have Bismarck have the January 9th City Current, and Mandan will come in on the 23rd.
Right.
And just to mention, on our January 9th meeting, we're going to have a special guest.
Special guest.
A 40-year retiree.
You got
it. Mr. Carl.
Carl Hockenstead, my first boss with the city. He's on his way out.
All about Carl on the 9th.
Are we going to roast him? Can we do that?
We could have people calling in. Or
I might have to just come over for that one.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. I don't think Carl knows what he's in for.
I don't think. So anyway, those two city currents, we'll just have the two that month. One will be for Bismarck and one will be for Mandan.
And we've moved the meeting because we didn't really think that folks wanted to attend a city commission meeting on
New Year's Day.
That's right.
That's the best way to start the year.
Maybe in Bismarck. See what you guys do next year.
So speaking of the holidays, that's the other last thing I wanted to mention was that your schedules have changed for the holidays. Garbage collection, that type of thing.
City office closures, things like that. So
check the website.
You got it.
Find out when. Otherwise, we could go through that and we'd all get confused about dates. So check the websites for both cities and you'll find that information. But remember, your garbage pickup might sit out there a different day.
Might be a different day. BismarckND.gov is our website.
And cityofmandan.com.
There we go.
Take a look.
Very good. So thanks for coming.
Thanks for hosting.
It was nice to have you both here today.
It's good to see you, Jim.
Thank Happy you, holidays to everybody. Thank you for watching and tuning into this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, you can contact the City of Bismarck at bismarcknd.gov or by calling 701-355-1300. For Mandan, visit cityofmandan.com or call 701-667-3215. If you have any suggestions, comments, or issues you'd like addressed in future City Current episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on KDAC 102.5 FM radio. It's also available as a podcast on kdacfm.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.